Welcome to Not So Different, a podcast from the Center for Biosimilars. I'm your host, Kelly Davio.
Last time on the podcast, we spoke with a practicing rheumatologist about his experience with biosimilars so far. But one of the most exciting prospects on the biosimilars horizon is the market entry of two approved anti-cancer biosimilars, trastuzumab and bevacizumab. This week, we're delving into the world of supportive care and anti-cancer biosimilars with an oncology expert, Dr. Robert M. Rifkin. Dr. Rifkin is the medical director of biosimilars at McKesson Specialty Health, part of the U.S. Oncology Network. We caught up with Dr. Rifkin last week at the Community Oncology Alliance's 2018 Community Oncology Conference in National Harbor, Maryland, to talk about experience with biosimilars so far and what the future holds in this therapeutic area. Dr. Rifkin, what are some of the lessons learned from experience with biosimilar filgrastim in the United States?
So I think, as everybody knows, filgrastim really has sort of three components to it. The first one is the reference product, which is Amgen's Neupogen. Then in addition, there was a filgrastim launched called Granix, which was really not a biosimilar. It used a traditional pathway of approval, the 351A. And when Zarzio came out, that was really our first true biosimilar launch that went through the 351K pathway. I think biosimilars are supposed to increase access and decrease cost. And what initially was seen is sort of a slow penetration into the market. And I think that's not initially what everybody expected. In certain segments of the market, there was a much higher penetration, certainly within the network that I work in, McKesson Specialty Health, but other markets showed a pretty slow uptake.
Do you expect to see a similar pattern of uptake with anti-cancer biosimilars, or are there some other considerations at work with those agents?
So the next biosimilars that are up for approval, two of them are supportive care medicines, and they'll be pegfilgrastim. I think that will somewhat follow what happened with Zarzio and the first biosimilar there. However, the next biosimilars that are going to launch are going to be therapeutic agents, and they'll be agents that are incorporated into regimens with curative intent. I think there the uptake will be different. There will need to be a lot more education. Not only will providers have to feel comfortable, but all of the stakeholders, whether it's advanced practice nurses, whether it's my infusion nurses, and then most importantly, the group I think we forget the most, are really educating our patients as to what biosimilars are and how they can really impact their care.
You mentioned education about these products. In terms of providers themselves, are there still some areas where healthcare professionals need education?
So I think the problem with provider education, having done it for a number of years, for the longest time we spoke and we really had no biosimilars on the market, it was kind of like selling vaporware to our practice providers. Now we have real concrete examples. We'll be able to get out in front of them and remind them not only of the similarity exercise, but the excellent science that goes into developing a biosimilar. And then lastly, start to educate people about reimbursement, decreasing cost, and importantly, as even Dr. Gottlieb pointed out, minimizing financial toxicity to the patients. That's clearly very important.
In terms of reducing costs, do you see biosimilars having a role to play in the oncology care model?
Absolutely. In fact, the oncology care model is the perfect place for biosimilars to integrate them not only in the oncology care model, but into all of our clinical pathways. Because as you know, with the oncology care model, we're evaluated for an episode of care, and it's the total cost of that episode. And if the biosimilars realize the cost savings that we hope, it's a perfect fit for the oncology care model.
How willing do you think payers will be to adopt anti-cancer biosimilars?
The payer market's fascinating because I think, just like all the stakeholders we mentioned, the payers need considerable education. So there are examples out there for which the payer's preferred drug might be the biosimilar, and the only way you could get the reference product is to fail the biosimilar. That's clearly a misunderstanding because it's essentially the same drug. And so there needs to be a lot of payer education.
Finally, what does global experience tell us about the safety and efficacy of these drugs?
So the global experience is very interesting. When Zarzio was filed and approved, one of the appendixes in their filing was 7 million safe patient days in Europe before it ever hit the United States. We now know that it's about 700 million safe patient days in Europe, and I think that's going to be a huge advantage. Again, it's an education issue. And then reviewing some of the writing that we and others have done, showing the safety of the biosimilars and helping to educate people regarding the biosimilar exercise.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of Not So Different. Until next time, visit us at centerforbiosimilars.com.